Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Nathaniel Philbrick, whose book, In the Hurricane's Eye, The Genius of George Washington and the Victory at Yorktown, is now available everywhere you buy books in paperback. It was a New York Times bestseller when it came out in hardcover a year ago, and now it's in paperback. Nathaniel, you've said throughout these three books that you've written most recently about the Revolutionary War, the Bunker Hill book and the follow-up book to that, when you put this together, you said that the Revolutionary War was not a linear progression. And did you find writing these three books was a linear progression for you?
That's a great question. You know, it was a progression because I wanted to see the thing through. I wanted to see specifically what happened to George Washington during the Revolution and also what happened to our country. But what amazed me, so in a way it was a linear progression. It was a descent almost into the topic and the time. But what kept amazing me was that it was really three different stories. You know, it begins with Bunker Hill, the Battle of Bunker Hill and Boston, Lexington, and Concord, all of that based in New England. And then the scene shifts to New York in the Middle States, and with Valiant Ambition, the book in which I compare and contrast George Washington with Benedict Arnold. That ends with his turning traitor at West Point. And then it heads south with In the Hurricane's Eye and the climax at Yorktown. And so it wasn't linear. It was almost geographic for me as we moved around the country. And you know, and I grew up thinking of each battle as a stepping stone to God-ordained American victory. And what I realized after by the end of this series, it wasn't that way at all, that the war basically came to an absolute stalemate by 1780, 5 years into it. And then in that final year, the year I recount in the Hurricane's Eye, everything miraculously came together, but not in a linear way by any means.
Well, and something I took away from this book is how much the Caribbean played and the weather there played an effect as far as the progression of the Revolutionary War, at least bringing it to an end. What was it about that was going on in the Caribbean at the time where that was where the big naval battles were at the time?
Yeah, you know, we think of the American Revolution as sort of the principal, that North America is where it was all going, that the 13 colonies were the jewel in Great Britain's crown. But the fact of the matter is the money was to be made in the islands in the Caribbean, the Sugar Islands, France's Haiti, what we call Haiti now, and Britain's Jamaica were making most of the money that was really coming into their countries. And so once our colonial rebellion turned into a world war with the entry of France on our side in 1778, suddenly, all bets were off. It was no longer England just trying to preserve those 13 colonies. It was England fighting not only France, but Spain. Ultimately, the Netherlands would also come in on it. It was a world war. And when you began to look at the world, what really mattered to England and France were those islands to the south. And so that's where all the naval power headed, much to George Washington's distress, who was hoping things would happen up in the 13 states to the north.
Why at this point didn't the British just say, to heck with it, let them have the continent, we'll take the Caribbean and keep the fight there?
That actually was proposed, as soon as France entered in 1778, there was talk in King George's cabinet saying, look, you know, we can't do all of this at once. Our navy is the biggest and most powerful in the world, but it has its limits. Because by this time, there was fighting going on in India. And so that was actually proposed. It was sort of a half measure. What they did, the British Army was stationed in Philadelphia and New York. The decision was made to consolidate their forces in New York. And that's really what led to the stalemate of the revolution, with the British dug into New York. Washington dug in just to the north on the banks of the Hudson River, and as the fighting proceeded in the Caribbean. And so what was happening in the Caribbean was ultimately going to have a huge impact on the course of the revolution.
You explain how the French Navy came to help George Washington and ultimately the colonial army, but with its navy. But was this sort of an enemy of my enemy situation with France?
Yes. France entered the war, yes, to help us, but really their main motivation was to take it to England. Great Britain had made a mockery of them, really, in the Seven Years' War, taking Canada. And their ally Spain was also humiliated with the loss of Florida and New Orleans and all this. And so even before the Seven Years' War was over in 1763, France had launched a program of revenge. And they made serious efforts to increase the effectiveness and size of their navy. And so when they saw the opportunity to come in to the American Revolution on America's side and take it to Great Britain, they took it. But what George Washington quickly learned was it was great to have this ally, but they had their own agenda. As the theater moved into the Caribbean, that was their primary focus, rather than helping him up to the north. And this was a source of frustration for him throughout the alliance.
How was it structured then? I mean, we'd all think of George Washington on the horse leading this Continental Army, and I think that's the popular version of the story. But who would have been in charge as far as instructing the French Navy, this is what we want you to do? Did George Washington have that type of knowledge?
Technically, he was the Allied commander, supreme commander, sort of like Dwight Eisenhower in World War II. But the fact of the matter is, France was pretty much doing what it wanted to do, and especially when it came to the Navy. And in fact, in the year 1781, the year of Yorktown, what Washington wanted desperately was the French Navy to sail up from the Caribbean and establish what he called naval superiority, so that his army, in conjunction with General Rochambeau's French army, which was stationed in Newport, could finally win the victory that might end the revolution. And unfortunately, from Washington's perspective, the French government instructed Rochambeau not to inform him on the whereabouts of the French Navy under the command of General de Grasse in the Caribbean. They were fearful that the American war effort was about to collapse. The American colonies were not willing to pay the taxes required to support Washington's army, which was withering on the vine. Recruitment levels were at an all-time low. And so they were fearful that the Navy would have to be used to basically rescue Rochambeau's army from Newport and sail off, abandoning the colonies to their fate. Can you imagine if this had happened? Luckily, a different result would occur when finally the French revealed to Washington that Rochambeau was to the south, de Grasse was to the south, and yes, he was going to come north to the Chesapeake Bay in late summer of 1781.
I'm chatting with Nathaniel Philbrick about his book, In the Hurricane's Eye, The Genius of George Washington and the Victory at Yorktown. It's available now in paperback, wherever you find books are sold. Just a question about the book industry. Is paperbacks as big a deal as it used to be? I mean, I would think people who've read this book, they're going to buy it. They're going to read it when it comes out. You've had books come out in paperback before. What's the lay of the land like for a author of your caliber when paperback books come out?
Well, it's interesting. It attracts often a different audience. I think there are readers out there who actually wait for books to come out in paperback, particularly when it comes to the summer. I think that's one of the reasons why this is being introduced just, as summer is upon us, that, people like to take paperbacks to the beach. And so, yeah, it has a new life for it. It's kind of fun when the paperback comes out. It's as an author, the reviews have already come through, so it's a little less anxious. And what's nice is when you go out on book tour and to events, a lot of people have actually read the book, which is which is fun, and there are people who are just getting introduced to it. So, yeah, it's a different rhythm. I've been in this kind of cycle now for 20 years, and e-books have changed the rhythm a little bit and all that. But you know what? What I've found, much to my contentment, I guess, is that, you know, the old rhythms seem to be reasserting themselves in a way that, there's the hardcover and the paperback. And you know, the other thing that's a little more different is people, I think, are listening to books more than they used to, which is kind of neat.
Well, getting back to the book, the whole situation, you're a maritime guy, and you've written tons about that over the years, but the role that the hurricanes played, there were those three hurricanes down in basically the October of 1780 in the Caribbean that played such a big role. This really explains how Providence played a role in the American Revolution, because probably but for those hurricanes, the Revolution wouldn't have ended the way it did.
Right. You know, I call this book In the Hurricane's Eye because actually, three hurricanes were critical in creating the circumstances of the year of Yorktown. In October of 1780, three of the most devastating hurricanes in the history of the world hit the Caribbean within weeks of each other, completely decimating both the French and British navies, and convincing the French that, okay, next summer, we do need to move our fleet north, if for nothing else, to save it from another one of these hurricanes. And so that set into motion the series of events that would ultimately lead to the victory at Yorktown less than a year later. And so, yes, I'm a maritime guy, and I was really looking forward to this book because I knew a naval battle was going to be a front and center when it came to the narrative. You know, we think of Yorktown as the victory that won us our independence, but the fact of the matter is it was a fait accompli, and I think that's the appropriate term given the circumstances of this naval battle. It was a naval battle fought in early September of 1781 between the British and the French. Lord Cornwallis had dug into Yorktown at the end of the point formed by the James and York River, and Admiral de Grasse was sailed into the Chesapeake and established naval superiority. This was looking really good. Washington and Rochambeau's armies were on their way south, but then on September 5th, a British navy appeared at the entrance of the Chesapeake under Admiral Graves, and the two fleets would go at it in what's known as the Battle of the Chesapeake. The British intended to, if they defeated the French, they would rescue Lord Cornwallis, and there would have been no victory at Yorktown, and very possibly America would have lost the Revolutionary War. But de Grasse made sure that didn't happen when he forced the majority of the British ships back to New York for repairs, just as Washington and Rochambeau's armies arrived, and Yorktown sealed Cornwallis's fate. And so, yes, there's the victory at Yorktown that won us our independence, but it was made possible by a naval battle in which no Americans participated. And I think this is a very important lesson for we Americans to realize, that without this alliance, without France, we would very likely not be an independent country.
Did France ever get its due back in the day when this occurred?
Well, you know, the great irony of the American Revolution was it unleashed the forces that would ultimately lead to the French Revolution, and the French Revolution would lead to the Reign of Terror. Many of the officers who contributed to the great victory in America would be beheaded by a guillotine, and to add to it, Admiral de Grasse, the great hero of the Battle of the Chesapeake, just months later would be defeated in the Battle of the Saints against the British in the Caribbean. And so it was a tangled legacy. They helped win us our independence, but in a way, the French king lost his life and his country as a consequence of his country being thrown into such debt by its support of the American Revolution.
All right. The book is In the Hurricane's Eye, The Genius of George Washington and the Victory at Yorktown, written by Nathaniel Philbrick, who has written all kinds of stuff about this and other issues regarding maritime things, the Revolutionary War. Check out any of his books. You will be entertained. And as he says, grab the paperback and take it to the beach this year. This will be a fun read. So, Nathaniel, just another fantastic offering from you. I know we're all waiting with bated breath for Travels with George coming up in the near future here. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us to discuss this one.
Oh, it was great to talk to you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Oh, the weatherman said